Good morning. This is Monica Cornetti. Welcome to Gamification Talk Radio. Gamification Talk Radio is for human resource and training and development specialists to show you how you can use the hot trend of gamification for increased employee engagement, solving leadership problems, training and development programs, and in general, building loyalty to your brand and your organization. My guests each week on the radio program include gamification gurus, platform providers, and end users who give tips, tools, and techniques that you can start to use immediately in your leadership toolbox. This week, we're doing a special program. My guest is Dutch Driver. And like most of my gamification colleagues, we met through social media. We've had a couple opportunities to meet live and in person now, and we're kindred spirits. We're working on some projects together, and we thought we would record a session with Dutch doing a little bit more of an interview of me. When we talk, we discuss all things gamification. He was asking me questions about challenges that I encounter in the pushback and the sale of gamification. Within work teams, who's giving pushback? Is it the millennials? Is it the boomers? And so we just did an open mic session. It actually is going to turn into two sessions. So I'm giving you part one today, and we'll do part two next week. When you look at what Dutch has done since 2013, he's really taken a deep dive into gamification. He helps to administrate our gamification hub on Facebook. Dutch has over 15 years in organizational development. He's got a lot of experience, everything in aerospace, federal government, healthcare, higher education. He's a Six Sigma Black Belt, certified Scrum Master. He holds a BA from McMurray University and an MA from Texas A&M. He's got a ton of knowledge, a ton of experience in the workplace, and a ton of information that he can add to this conversation on gamification. It's very casual. I didn't do editing of it. You're going to hear a lot of ums and pauses, but just enjoy the conversation that Dutch and I are having. And any questions that you have, reach out to us with them. We'll be happy to answer them.
You do most of the interviewing, but I would like to know as a listener is what are the objections you hear when you're talking gamification, and then maybe we can talk about how you might overcome them. But the objections, like, oh, I don't want my employees having games. No, that kind of stuff.
Well, first off, there is a dismal lack of knowledge at all about gamification. There is, again, we talked about this last week, that inside our little gamification circle, we think everybody's doing it and it's already dead. Outside, 1 foot, 1 inch outside that circle.
A millimeter.
This much. I know that if I ask a room full of, and these are leaders in organizations, these are people who are leading teams and moving up, they're young, they are some of them are gamers, some of them are not, but they are the group of people that if it's going to be happening in corporate America, these people would know about it. And these people don't know about it. They've been through all kinds of trainings and they don't know. So there's the lack of knowledge. Okay. So that's the first thing, is that we have to educate them on what it is.
I know the arguments against, I don't want my employees playing games.
Yeah.
And I think that I've ordered the book, The Gamified World, and it should be here next week. So there will be some criticisms in there. And I think we need to address that. So
I'm getting really a lot more excited about the technology because it's becoming a lot more affordable for people as more. But even with technology, you still want to start in a no tech. You still want to start that way because you want to iterate, because things aren't going to come out exactly as you think they are. And so get it right and then go at find the technology that's going to work for you. So I think that the fear of having to do design and designing a game, like they think it's a video game. But the biggest pushback I get is going us as boomers moving in the direction of millennials. I get pushback from boomers that they don't want to adjust what they're doing in the workplace because of these millennials. Because these millennials need to put down their games and get to work. Because we're coddling them, they're entitled, they just walk in thinking they know everything and they want it to be fun and entertaining, and we're important people doing important work, and we don't have time for that.
So, yeah, that's it. That's an ego thing. Let me tell you, coming from that, what you just said, I don't know if it's hard to write this, but early in my gamification time, I had that same attitude. These people are spoiled, and I talk about it whenever I'm out talking to people. They have graduation ceremonies in kindergarten now. They have graduation ceremonies in first grade, second grade. All those have graduation ceremonies. I had graduation ceremony eighth grade, high school, and college. Four total. My entire life, four graduation yeah. ceremonies. One of the things that I encountered early in gamification is addressing that attitude. And I can't remember who says it. I kind of think it's Gabe, but I'm not really sure about that. He says, you know, we're looking at them. We think they're all spoiled and they get rewarded for everything. Maybe they are getting rewarded appropriately and we were under rewarded.
That's an interesting spin. The other thing is that whether something should be or shouldn't be, well, it shouldn't be that way. They shouldn't feel like they should get rewarded. They get rewarded for everything. They get graduation. Whether it should or shouldn't, it is what it is. We spend a lot of energy on, well, it shouldn't be that way. They need to just come the hard direction. And that's a lot of wasted energy because it doesn't matter what it should be. It is what it is. We have to, as leaders in organizations, remember that we created this. We created it because we've been rewarding this generation their entire life. We did that. They didn't do it. They didn't ask for it. They didn't demand it. We did it. And so when we started rewarding, I call it the 8-year-old soccer trophy, you know, that yay, you know, they did.
Attaboy, good job.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, they picked dandelions at the field. They did, but they got a soccer, a trophy, and a pizza party at the end. You know, they didn't. they get a free.
That's funny.
They get a freaking toy for getting food at a fast food drive-in. They get rewarded for buying food since they were. And as a parent of three young boys who had a lot of energy, because at the time, my husband, when we were married, he was singing a lot, like in Branson and Eureka Springs. So I was based in Pennsylvania, taking in my van three boys across the country on various trips so to go where their dad was singing as much as we could. So I'm piled three kids in a van, and I'm looking for those McDonald's that are going to reward them with a toy and have a little playground for them to play on, because I strategically plan the trip to let them burn off 20 minutes of energy, get some food, get a toy, back in the van, back at it again. So their whole life has been conditioned. Remember the generation before them, Generation X, that's the kids that we went ahead and put a key on a shoestring around their neck when they were in first grade. Yeah. And sent them home from school, and because mom wanted to be out working. Mom didn't want to be at home anymore. I'm not judging that at all. I was one of those moms. But that latchkey kid, where that term got – where it first phrased for the Gen Xers, they were raised so independently, and then adults realize it's probably not the best thing to be sending 5- and 6-year-olds home alone and with their chore list. So from that point – we started structuring every moment of their day.
This is a valuable thing. It's the adults being an older guy. I didn't have kids, but I have that outside view that I didn't have to keep them entertained all the time. So I'm like, we went out and, you know, I was played in the dirt with a spoon. You know, we didn't have, I mean, that's what we did.
Literally. We made mud pies.
The thing about gamification that I hear is, oh, we don't want our employees playing games. Although, the way that how familiar are you with the federal government pay structure?
I'm familiar with the grades and
okay,
yes,
gamified, right. And even though Bartles talks about he doesn't think that the outside of the muds that he used to develop the four player types, you can see that in organizations. Within organizations, for us, it would be for SES. SES in the federal service is the very top. Besides politicals, that's like a whole different level. But this is as far as you can go. They're not motivated when they get there. They have no other way of progressing, and they've been progressing through the chains all their lives, and they get there, and there's like nothing else. And I think we as gamifiers, we can bring that conversation to the table and say, You know, you've been competing all your life, and suddenly there's nothing else to compete for other than headcount and budget. How motivating is that?
Yeah, I think that the okay. So when I hear that, so the risks that I see, and not to be negative Nelly, because
okay, we're having a conversation. Yeah,
negative Nelly says, well, the first risk is that as soon as an administration changes, anything that's been put into place that is remotely good will be axed and changed. So we know that we have this constant flux of how people are managed, how people are led, what's the best way to do it, based on whoever is controlling the purse strings. And so that changes. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a negative, but to build something good, we need to know that there's going to be some longevity there. Now, the pay scales have been there. The other thing with that, what you just said is, in a nutshell, you've been competing your whole life, but once they get that job inside the federal government, competition kind of comes to an end. There is really nowhere to go. And so from working with people in my seminar rooms for the past 10 years, this is just an observation, is that they kind of went that direction because they know it's kind of a sure thing. Like, I was working for a county in Maryland, and the one leader who was in the class with me, she's like, what am I supposed to do with this person? He knows he's retiring in 13 months. He's literally got a calendar on his door that he's crossing off the days till he's out of here with full retirement benefits, whatever those look like. But see, he went into that job. This is what the job looked like. They guaranteed that if you work here for X amount of years, you're going to retire, you're going to get your retirement. And that's just kind of what they locked into. All of that to say, when we're looking at the type of place where we want to expend energy and resources to get people moving, what is it that these people want? What do they want? Remember when we were talking about they want to go on vacation, they want to go to the beach or the mountains, but what do they want from work? Do they really want to advance? I graduated from school with some people who have decided, they've decided in their career to stay in a position that's an hourly position because they'll make more money with less responsibility to just provide like direct care instead of having to move up to managing people who are providing direct care. So direct care in a hospital is an hourly position. You can get overtime for it. You can pick your hours pretty much. You don't have the responsibility of leading people. So the desire is not really there to move up in management. So if we're going to work on gamifying something, what we have to go all the way back to is, well, what do these players want? Why did they pick employment at a government agency? When you're looking at the benefits and security, what would motivate them then to want to move up in levels? Everything goes back to, if that's what motivated them in the first place, if we go back to the 16 motivators from Reese Profile, you know, some people, that's what they want, is exactly what they chose. But then from you, Dutch, surprisingly, somebody who's not an achiever, words out of your own mouth that I'm not an achiever, it looks like we're trying to maybe gamify achievement, but they themselves are not.
I'm more of an explorer, and I'm motivated by cool. I think I've told you that. Let's take what you said and just play with it with some of the stuff we know.
Okay.
What you said about them, my example here is the loyalty programs that came out from the airlines. That's a really good example of putting that into play. When the mileage came out, one of the things when they put the frequent flyer miles, and I was in Texas when American Airlines introduced that, they didn't ever imagine a million-mile flyer. So they were putting it into place, but when those million-milers got to the million-mile, there wasn't any more perks for them, so they left the airline that they'd been storing up a million miles and went somewhere else because there were something in it for them. Most of the programs now have like 4 million mile per year flyers because they learned to extend it. Federal government service don't have that. It's a hard cutoff. There's no benefit to going. Now, let me pair that with American Express. They started off with the green card, and the first premium card they came out was with the gold card, and then they came out with platinum, and everybody wanted a platinum card. Well, what they did is they were running out of precious metals, So to keep going, they had to switch frames to go not precious metals but colors. And you'd be surprised how many people I talk to about this. And I mentioned green, you know, green is the color of money, gold's precious, platinum's precious, but the next one was black. There are a lot of people that do not know about the black card. And American Express is taking what they've learned about from loyalty programs from the airlines and extending it. They're going to give them something else to do because the prestige in that black card is the motivator. I mean, you get some perks and stuff, but I think the biggest perk is you have a black card. Because I remember people when they had gold cards, it was a big thing, gold cards, when they came out. It was a big thing when platinum, you have a platinum card. Yeah. But black is another level. So my guess is they switch frames and they're going to use colors because they can extend colors from now on.
Right. Okay, so then how would we, like, let's take something inside the federal government, like your friend
okay,
who.
Okay. So, I was going to go there.
Okay.
So you're talking about, and the way they talk about it in the federal government is RIP, retired in place.
Yeah.
What I think has happened there, that's a little bit more complex than what other people, but I look at it as a culture guy. And what I think is in a social network guy, there's a couple of things going on. We did a culture survey as a pilot years ago, and I got to put in one question. I mean, we customized the question. I put in one question. It's about tenure. Very small, very, very, very small sample, so I can't make a valid thing, but it was an indicator. And what the culture came back is for people less than 5 years of tenure, it wasn't working for them. From 5 to 15 years, it was working really well. They were really satisfied. And after that, it started dropping off that they weren't as satisfied. Now, I had to really think about that. Is what I think happens is they don't renew the social friendships. So let me go into that. They don't get called in to do the cool projects anymore. Because the young people are, you know, they're the ones that know about it. The older people don't refresh with the younger people, and their networks retire. So as that network retires, they are disconnected from the cool stuff that NASA did. That was NASA. That's a big stretch, but I think it's an interesting observation that you need to gamify the millennials with the people retired in place.
Absolutely. Yeah, it needs to be, and that's one of the biggest challenges. We've got this talent drain going on. It's a reality in the workforce. There's not enough of the Gen X, which, you know, they've been referred to as the squashed generation, because we talk about the boomers and we talk about the millennials, and there's this little generation right here, the Gen Xers, and there's not enough of them number-wise to move into the boomers' place. So we've got this knowledge up here that the boomers have from experience, not because they're right. smarter, not because they're more capable, not more anything, just more years in place. And so in order to get that knowledge transferred down here where it has to happen for the boomers to exit, there's got to be something where the collaboration is something that the millennials will buy into. I think the biggest barrier to that is the boomers, because you have to remember that when we came into the workforce, we were pretty much taught to wait your turn.
Right.
You have to be here 3 years before you can do that. You never speak up in staff meeting. You've only been here for 2 weeks. What are you doing talking in staff meeting? You got to wait until you're called on. You don't just speak out. You don't say hi to the CEO when you see him in the hall. Don't do that. Don't make eye contact. Wait till he speaks to you. Well, the millennials, they don't even understand the language we're speaking when we say things like that to them. You know, why wouldn't they? They've been going to adults their whole life as advisors. And so the CEO, who is an older but maybe not all that much older, he's just another advisor role for them, somebody who knows something that they don't know and can help them to get where they're going. And, you know, this is somebody they want to talk to, and they've been told their whole life that they've got something to say and go ahead and speak up and say it. And now we bring them into the workplace and we want to squash that. So the essentialness of bringing those generations together is without question. I think there'll have to be more movement from the boomers than there'll have to be from the millennials. Yeah, I think if the millennials believe, and the only way they can believe it is if it's true, because we can try and sell people a bill of goods, but we both know when we're
I think the sales, I think the sizzle with the steak selling is pretty much going to die when it reaches the millennial thing.
Because they'll go research it. They'll just go look it up. Well, I don't think that's true. Let me go Google that. Let me go find they'll go look it up. It's the X generation and the Ys are the first generation that didn't need us, the people above them, to get them the information that they need. The millennials will have to move also. They will have to move some in the direction of boomers that just to – not to change who they are, but just to realize that they've got so much to contribute and they just need to go – they need to understand. If we all just would come from the position of understanding, just like when we talked the other day about personality styles and, well, I want to go to the beach and you want to go to the mountains. Well, you know, it doesn't make mountains wrong and beach right or vice versa. It just means that we both have different desires, choices that we would make. So how can we take those and find some way that we can work that together? And I think that if we can get people in the workplace working towards that, and gamification can add a lot to that. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So one of the things you were talking about is the squashed generation, the Generation X. And I'm not sure if you said this or somebody, but I've heard it within the last 6 months. Is the millennials don't have a problem with older people, I don't think the boomers have a problem. They're getting ready to go out anyway. It's the wisdom versus the knowledge here. The problem is the squash generation, the Generation X versus the millennials. And I don't remember if you said this, but somebody told, I read it or something, is they, Generation X is close enough to millennials to be threatened by them, and they view them as competition. Millennials don't think that way. The guys that are going out don't think that way. But the guys in the middle manager, they're being threatened by a change that they're not that prepared for. Now, I think one of the things that goes on in corporate is to manage that is they talk about mentorship programs. And I know NASA, I know where I was at NASA, it didn't work out very well because there's so much overhead on the formal mentorship process. They talk about it a lot, but I think the informal mentorship happens organically. I just don't think it's, right. I don't think that's something an organization can put in place with the tools that they had, but there are ways to do it now. You could give the millennials a mission to go out and meet X-level CEO or director or something like that. Just have a meeting with them, and they get points for that as they move, and they get a badge from working a shift over in, or not a shift but a tour of duty in a different department, where that goes with them. That kind of goes with the open badge that's coming out of Mozilla. They would have a badge on their little profile that says, I know about procurement, which would make them good team members if you're working on a multi-layered project with procurement as being a part of it. They know they could be the representative for that.
I think that's good.
Gamify that.
I think it's good. And keeping in mind a couple things, I'm going to write it down so I don't forget, but I interviewed Ann Coppins last week, and she's working, in fact, I'm going to use the case study in my book. She's working on developing a learning community, and that's one of the things that we talked about, is that it really does have to be organic, because what they're trying to do is, this is the interest over here, well, who else is interested in that, and that then people will come and go through that group, which I don't want us to forget to talk about Gamification Hub today, so I'm going to write that down too. What you're talking about with that sharing of knowledge and gamifying it in that learning community, that would be great. The other thing I think we need to remember in setting that up is, what do they want? So with the millennials, they understand procurement now, so they get that badge. That's great, because we're setting up programs. You know, so many of the organizations totally team run. Their bonus and their performance reviews are tied with that. Those are good because it'll help you put a good team together. The other thing we need to make sure we're doing in a gamified system like that is including things in there that they can earn points and badges for things they want to do. So with the millennials, for example, giving back to their community is a big deal.
Right.
So we need
thing,
to
yeah.
give them time and ability to do something that's altruistic in their community to get involved. They are competitive, but they are competitive like together because they've been put on teams their whole life. They want teams to succeed, but they've been competing for, you know, top spots in colleges. They've been being groomed for top colleges since preschool. You know, they were on a waiting list for preschool. You know, all they want to do is play. And so they've been groomed their whole life. And the gamification, like you're talking about, I think would be really powerful. We just need to remember to keep in there rewarding them for things that are valuable to them that are also valuable to us as an organization and not to
and
forget
society.
That. Yeah.
Because you need to, as I've thought about gamification, we talk about enterprise and marketing, but there is society too. Like, for example, Habitat for Humanity. The federal government has what is called the federal campaign. It happens sometimes in September to November, I think it's a big charity drive that the federal government puts. So they give them like 4 hours to go off and work on these projects. But it's not as it's the employee can pick their own project, but they don't ever report back very well how the individual's contribution added up over all of them. And they have the hours and all this kind of stuff. But it's, the story that they tell is not all that. It's numbers. It's not, they lack the humanity that these people are trying to change. So one of those that we could gamify there is that if they work on this project, but they're actually doing some stuff behind the scenes to manage this other project, which to motivate where they would get credit for it. That's the big thing, credit.
Right.
It's getting credit for it.
Right.
And, which is coined to us. I mean, but credit, they don't want to do it because nobody will know that they did it.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right. Anytime we do something that's remotely competitive, what do they get? They want something. They don't want to just win and say, okay, let's go back to what we were doing. Because you can see the look on their face like, we just won. And you want to say it was a card game.
Yeah.
But to them, it was something that had to do with the training, so it must be important, and they just won it. So we need to make sure that they get recognition for it. So the credit is really good. It's very good.
Going back, I'm going to an experience going back about 20 years. There was a presentation in Lubbock from a UT business school professor. I think his name is Larry Bowen. He talks about a global, like an organic team, where this global guy gets together. They meet quarterly, once a quarter. They go off, they have their action steps and all this kind of stuff. And they, what I remember was, is the prize was a Snickers bar.
Yeah.
These people, they didn't get salary or anything else. The big competitive thing was out of all these people, like 15, 30 people, something like that, they were high level folks, but they were competing for the Snickers bar.
Yeah.
That it's not what it is. It's what the social structure creates the value around the reward. Make it important. Keeping in mind, everybody getting the same reward is not motivating to anybody.
Yeah, no, not at all. In fact, for achievers, it's demotivating. I mean, you want to say, keep it. I don't even want it. You know, forget it. You're giving that person the same thing you're giving me. Take it back. I remember I worked for a short stint at a university. And that was, you know, the standard across the board, whatever the raise was for the year. And I had been the go-to person in that department. Everything that needed done, they came to me. I made sure it happened. I loved every single minute of it, loved it. But when they came time for raises and they said, okay, it's just across the board, everybody's getting this, it was like they slapped me in the face. It would have been better to say there's no raises this year because I wasn't doing it for them. But as soon as they made it, I was like, keep it. I don't want it. Because I really worked very hard to create what we created here, and you're attaching the money to that, but all the rest, they didn't. So for achievers, and the challenge with that, so as boomers, we need to hear this. The challenge with that is that if there's a shortage of top talent in our millennials because and the Gen X because there's boomers moving out and we don't have people. If we need to keep the cream of the crop, the top talent, we have got to make sure and recognize them for what they've done and not demotivate them by performance review where five exceeds expectations and we don't give fives. We only give fours because a five would say that you're perfect. Well, five doesn't say perfect. It says exceeded expectations. If you're a go-to person, you better give them that five or they will go somewhere where somebody will give them the five or the Mavericks, they'll just start running the show themselves. So that's a key thing for boomers. That's, again, where somewhere, somehow, in human resources, it got all mucked up that this
used a really nice word for what happened.
The pop psychology of we can't give fives is so – and, I can tell you that weekly I have leaders in my classroom that say, I'm not allowed to. My boss will not let me.
That's because they've tied those fives to pay, which is a mistake. They shouldn't have ever tied them to pay. They should have had another framework for that.
Right. And they have the mistake that – five means they'll quit trying because they've achieved it. When does an achiever ever quit trying when they achieve? Their phrase is, what's next?
When's an explorer stop exploring? I can tell you never.
And that's it. An achiever never stops achieving. An explorer never stops exploring. And we're out of time for today. So I hope you enjoyed that and you'll join us next week. Reach out to Dutch, dutch.driver@gmail.com is his email. Twitter handle is Dutch_driver. Go to my website, monicacornetti.com. You can do a / on gamification. Also, please go to Sententia Games, where you will see information on our gamification certifications and some free programs for you. Take advantage of all the information that people who have been working in this field for quite some time can bring to you. And reach out with questions because it's a very friendly community and we want to see people succeed in this. We want to make work more fun and reach our business objectives. So we'll see you next week, everyone. Thank you so much.